And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite teabagging rednecks. Mark Gillar.
Good morning and welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am your host, Mark Gillar. My guest today, Jedediah Bila, is a conservative columnist, a commentator. She contributes to The Daily Caller and Human Events. She's also a regular guest on Fox News and Fox Business and even goes behind enemy lines at MSNBC. She's here today to talk to us about her new book, Outnumbered, Chronicles of a Manhattan Conservative. Jedediah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I know all my Tea Party listeners out there are very excited to have you on the show today. I have to ask, how does one go from being a school teacher in New York to being a widely recognized, very popular television commentator in such a short period of time?
You know, that's a great question. I started writing on a blog. That's really how I began in 2009, and I immediately got a ton of hate mail, so I knew that I was doing something very right. I seem to have angered the left right out of the gate. So I just began writing, and soon after that, my content was published at Human Events, and The Daily Caller, and AMAC, which is the conservative alternative to AARP. And TV sort of found me after that. Sean Hannity, who's become a good friend of mine, found me first and stuck me on the Great American Panel. And everything sort of blossomed after that. And I think part of it is that I'm just a regular person with an opinion, speaking my mind, a proud member of the Tea Party myself. And I don't belong to any sort of machine or establishment, or I'm just me, just a girl out here who has something to say and started saying it. So I think that from what I hear, feedback from readers was very much appreciated.
I noticed one similarity in our backgrounds. I went to Catholic school from kindergarten through eighth. It looks like you went the whole 12 years.
Yes, I did. I went from first grade straight through to 12 in Staten Island, actually, at the same school, lower school, middle school, and high school.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that we're both such independent thinkers.
You know, I was very lucky. A lot of times when I tell people that, they jump to the conclusion that, oh, well, that's why you're a conservative and you were indoctrinated. You know, the left loves that because I went to Catholic school, all of a sudden they think I was indoctrinated. But in reality, I feel so lucky. I had so many teachers growing up that encouraged me to think for myself. I had teachers that you could tell tilted left for sure in high school, but were very intelligent and very open to debate and healthy debate and really encouraged me to form my own opinion. So I feel incredibly lucky for those years, and then was able to go on to college and to Columbia University and really sort of have my principles intact. So and that is very much attributed to my high school years and the great teachers that I had.
I feel the exact same way. Those memories of some of the very special teachers, you know, the type of teachers who forego the bigger paycheck elsewhere and will teach at a private Catholic school because they love the idea of working with kids who want to learn and parents who want to give full support so their parents can learn. Those are very, very special people who turn down the bigger public school check oftentimes just because they love working with children who want to learn. Let me ask you this, and I'm confused about this because I'm in Texas right now and things like this just don't happen here, but you put on a Sarah Palin button and were frequently the target of profanity on the streets of New York?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, all the time. And it continues. Just last week, I went for a run in the park, which I do often, and I don't even realize what I'm wearing sometimes. And I had a Reagan was Right t-shirt on, which I have a ton of conservative gear for both me and my dog, by the way. So
Emma?
I was
Emma,
out.
Are we talking about Emma?
We're talking about Emma. She's the star. I'm just a sidekick. But
okay.
I
talked to her publicist. I've got her coming on next week.
Let me tell you something. She has a lot to say. In fact, you know what? If this GOP field doesn't shave up, I'm running her for president.
There
you go.
So you
guys better get ready. But, you know, I often wear clothing like that. And just last week had a similar experience where I was stopped and borderline harassed. And, of course, it's amusing to me beyond measure. But particularly during the 2008 presidential election, I think that people in Manhattan really had their horns twisted, so to speak, about Sarah Palin, and they took a real issue with her. And any sort of conversation or article of clothing that represented support for her really became the target of harassment. So I chronicled that in the book, and I just chronicled the hypocrisy of the left who were preaching tolerance to me and preaching diversity and civility and all these things, and then who were harassing me for having a different opinion.
Well, you know the old saying, liberals are for free speech as long as you agree with them. And by the way, I noticed in the book that one of your students actually thought Sarah Palin said she could see Russia from her house. And I was going to say, don't be too hard on that student, because when John Ziegler, who's been on this show, interviewed Barbara Walters on his radio show, she actually thought that Sarah Palin had said that as well. And that's what happens when people look to Jon Stewart and Saturday Night Live for their news content.
Yeah, that's very true. Students had a wealth of misconceptions about Democrats and Republicans. Sarah Palin, though, seems to be the figure who people think they know everything about, when in fact they really know very little about. And I do encourage everybody to go see that film, The Undefeated, which is out now, which I've seen. I attended the premiere. Whether you're supporting her for president or not, everyone needs to see that film. It sets the record straight and really exposes the left-wing mainstream media for what it is, which is quite a disgrace. But, yeah, that was something I faced all the time with respect to her and Ronald Reagan and my support for conservative principles and our Constitution living in Manhattan. That's part of the job, I guess.
I haven't traveled to that area of the country that many times, but my recollection from the times I've been there is that people tended to look down at their shoes and not talk much on the street or talk much on the subway. I'm just surprised to find that someone broke that silence and was willing to confront you. That, and again, here in Texas, people are friendly. They wave. They say, hey, how's it going? But in terms of confronting someone because of their political ideology, that just doesn't happen. And it may have something to do with the fact that we have a concealed carry law here. But
yeah, well, what's interesting is during the election season, there were stands everywhere with Obama gear. So everywhere you turned, whether I was in Union Square or Columbus Circle or any area in Manhattan that had a park, Washington Square Park, anywhere, there would be these stands with T-shirts and hats and pins, all pro-Obama, lots of anti-Palin stuff. So I think that, you know, just walking past that and presenting your different opinion on your sleeve or on your collar was considered antagonistic to people who really ascribe to a collectivist mindset. They're not used to that. They're either used to someone who has a different opinion and cowers, or someone who just says, you know what, let me go with the trend and go with the flow. And that is the complete opposite of how I live my life. So I wasn't too well received when I was outspoken.
I can only imagine. I think it's humorous that you were relaying the story of your friend who hated Rush Limbaugh because he's a hypocrite, and he's a piece of scum, he's a piece of trash, and really couldn't provide any details to back that up. Do you find that's typical of liberals in your area?
Oh, yes. They hate who they're supposed to hate, who the media has told them to hate. They can't tell you why. They can't give you specifics. When it comes to politicians, they can't talk policy. Very often, they can't even defend their own candidates. I had conversations that I talk about in the book where I'm inviting them to defend Obama. Why are you supporting him? What do you think about his voting record? And these individuals just couldn't cite anything. It was just hope, change, yes, we can. He was smart sounding. All of this nonsense. And when I would come back and present why I was supporting Sarah Palin or why I support X candidate or Y candidate, they were sort of perplexed, like, wow, that you did your research? It was sort of foreign to them. So that's a big problem because you have mainstream media hypes up a candidate and people buy into it. They don't do their own investigative research. They buy into stereotypes and all sorts of misinformation, and then they perpetuate that. So it needs to be stopped. You have to call every individual that you call out and say, that's not what happened. If someone that may take a moment, think about it, look it up, that you may not sway them, but if you talk to 10 people, you might sway one, and that's worth it to me.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, I was reading that in the book, and it reminded me of a conversation I had with a very educated man, and he was repeating a Politico talking point, and he said, well, you know, the problem with you conservatives is that you consider facts to be inconvenient things. And I said, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Lay an inconvenient fact on me. And he thought for a minute. He goes, well, global warming. None of you guys believe in global warming, for crying out loud. And I said, well, why do you believe in it? Well, I mean, that's what all the scientists say. And I said, well, I can show you a petition with 39,000 scientists saying that it's hogwash. Well, you're right. Not even qualified to talk about this. You're not a scientist. I said, well, you know, you were asking me about it a minute ago, but my opinion differs from yours, and then I shouldn't be talking about it. You're not a scientist. You're talking about it. So then I went over a whole bunch of points as to why I didn't believe in anthropogenic global warming. And the guy actually said, well, you've actually taken the time to research this. You're very well versed in it. This isn't really a fair conversation.
Yeah, admitting that he hadn't done his research. One thing I found that, you know, I speak to even people on the right who were formerly members of the left and converted, and we always talk about how people on the left are so uncomfortable with differing opinions, and it's really astounding to me. I don't like to make generalizations, but I have to say that 99% of people from the far left that I have encountered and tried to engage in debate with and tried to have a reasonable conversation become so uncomfortable with differing opinions that you can't make that happen. You can't have that debate. It turns into insults. Everything is taken as a personal attack, even if I'm talking about the debt or the debt ceiling or whatever the issue may be. So it's a very difficult dilemma that we have right now. And I think you have to engage, as difficult as it is, you have to call people out when they don't have their research or when they're ill-researched. Because otherwise, like I said, that message gets perpetuated. It gets spread throughout the culture. And then you have people voting in accordance with misinformation, which is what we had in 2008.
I've always found it interesting, and I'd like your take on this, that the left considers itself to be the champion of women's rights, yet they thought Sarah Palin should be home raising her five kids, as you pointed out in your book, but they never had a problem with Nancy Pelosi not being home raising her five kids. Ed Schultz called Laura Ingraham a slut. Bill Maher called Sarah Palin a twat. And not a single person on the left has a problem with Sharia law that relegates women to being nothing more than second-class citizens, barely more valuable than livestock. So why are they the champions of women's rights?
Well, they're not. They're the champion. The National Organization for Women and a lot of the organizations that are in line with them have become champions of left-wing ideology and left-wing policy. It's not about women. It's not about women's rights. It's not about what's best for women. It's oftentimes a pro-abortion movement at all costs, so that if you're a conservative politician and you're female and you happen to be pro-life, then you become completely written off. So that is something that unfortunately exists in our society, and that's why feminism has been given a bad name. And I have invited people time and again to revisit a lot of the founding feminists who happen to have been pro-life, and to revisit what feminism should mean in our modern-day society, which is something that empowers women, empowers all people to be the best they can be, to fight for, yes, things like equal work for equal pay and all of that, but to also recognize that we are not divided by gender, and that shouldn't be, you shouldn't be voting for someone because they're a woman or not voting for them because they're not. And of course we see that on the left with the media and with respect to how they selectively admonish people if they say something bad about Pelosi, for example. But Sarah Palin, you can get away with tormenting to no end, and all of a sudden you can hear crickets chirping.
Do you think we're in a situation where the conservative media is starting to fear Obama? And I ask this for a very specific reason, and as uncomfortable as the birther issue makes people, since that long-form birth certificate was released, many well-respected people who've published numerous times on Adobe software have come forward and said, this document contains multiple fonts in the same line of typing that couldn't have been done with a 1961 typewriter. This document contains kerning, which means, for the listeners, moving the letters in a word closer together or farther apart in order to make them aesthetically pleasing. 1961 typewriters didn't do that. Present-day computers do. It's so obvious that this is a forgery. It's not even a good forgery. It's a poor forgery. But even the conservative media will not touch this issue. Why not?
Well, I think the conservative media is rightfully focused on the damage he's doing right now in the country in terms of what he's doing, in terms of ballooning our debt and our deficit, in terms of the lies that he spews forth. I watched his press conference today, and it was outrageous. You borderline can't stomach the lies, because he's talking about fiscal discipline, and this is a president that's added more to the national debt than Washington through Reagan combined. So I think everyone is rightfully focused on that. I personally happen to be of the opinion that he President Obama was born here, but he's a terrible president. And that's what I'm fighting to make happen, which is for him to leave in 2012 and to replace him with a strong fiscal conservative. I don't think that the conservative media is shying away from calling Obama out for his policies. I think they really just have their focus like a laser right now on, this is a president we need to remove from office in 2012 because he's damaging for the country.
So why did we go after Clinton for having an affair with an intern, but we won't go after Obama for blatantly falsifying a legal document?
Well, I think Clinton once again, I'll say Clinton needed to be gone after for a number of reasons, and I think character was a large part of that. I think right now what's important to people in general, when you speak about the left and when you speak about the right, are issues of character. Someone's going to do what they say they're going to do. Someone's going to not just spew rhetoric, but actually get into office and make that policy happen. And I think that's what we're looking at when we talk about presidential candidates. I think it's what we're, when we talk about John Boehner and we talk about Eric Cantor and we talk about all these people, I think that's what's, that's where the focus is. People want authenticity, and character is important. So when you look at a whole slew of presidential candidates, I think that the issue of character will be a priority for people.
Well, I hope so, because you said authenticity, and I had to laugh. I didn't know if you were intentionally making a pun, but, I mean, this kind of speaks to authenticity, and falsifying a legal document specifically speaks to character. I promise not to belabor the point, but honestly, Jedediah, if you bought a painting that was supposedly painted in 1850 and you gave it to an expert to review and that expert said, gee, Jedediah, I don't know how to tell you this, but that painting contains some paints that weren't developed until the 1930s and 1940s, you would probably say, I just bought a fake painting. But I'm telling you that there is kerning in this document. There is, you know, multiple fonts found in this document. And that's no different than somebody saying this painting's from 1750 and they're using paints from the 21st century. And yet nobody wants to tackle this issue. I mean, I'm just appalled that people are saying we don't need to be focused on this right now. The President of the United States, basically, some people have described it as a giant middle finger to America. He released a document so poorly forged, it's as almost as if he's daring somebody to knock that chip off his shoulder and accuse him of it, and everybody's running away from it. And that includes people at Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, you know, Glenn Beck. Everybody's running away from this. I just don't get it. I'm sorry. I'll go on to another subject, but it just seems to me sad that when somebody releases something that's that blatantly false, that the right wing media, at least, or the conservative media, you won't touch it. I mean, aren't you disappointed a little?
Well, I would say that, you know, with respect to, you said some comments about middle finger to America, whatever, I think his policy does that. So that's what I'm focused on, to be honest with you. I think that everything that he does in the way of policy is a catastrophe. I will repeat, I do personally believe that he was born here. That has not been a primary issue of my focus. I am here to tear down the policy and to see to it that it doesn't continue after 2012. That's my priority.
Well, a good way to do that would be to kick him out of office for falsifying a document. But I'll move on. I've dwelled on this too long. Let me ask you this. The school system that you described to me was appalling. I mean, what I read in the book was appalling, that children, not so much that they were pro-Obama, but that they were anti-American. I mean, this wasn't an Acorn-sponsored school. It wasn't a La Raza-sponsored school. This was, I'm gathering, a decent school with decent people, yet the kids seemed unquestionably anti-American. How do we win the schools back? You were a teacher. What would you do if you were in charge of the school to help win the schools back and make the kids proud of America?
Well, it is a problem, and I've taught in different types of schools. That particular school was a private school in Manhattan. I've taught in Catholic schools in Staten Island. I've taught in at the college level at a place called Wagner College, which is also where I got my BA. And the problem is you have a lot of revisionist history that's taught. As a result, students grow up thinking about America as imperialistic and, you know, not being a country that has done for good for the world, not being a country that's exceptional. They don't understand founding American principles. They don't understand things like American exceptionalism. They look negatively on that, or almost as if America is being pompous when they say things like, guess what, we are an exceptional nation, and that's why everyone's fighting to come over here. You don't see people fighting to leave. You see people fighting to come here. So I think it has to start in the classroom with proper history being taught about how we were founded. These students need to understand the Constitution. They don't recite the Pledge of Allegiance. How can you expect students who don't know the Pledge of Allegiance to be prepared to fight for the country, be it in our military or just be it in terms of who they elect and who they vote for and who they support in elections, and if they get involved in campaigns, whose side they're on, so to speak. So they're inculcated from a very young age to believe that the left is an ally of not only our youth, but minorities and women and the poor, and that the Republicans and folks on the right are allies of the rich and the big oil companies. And it's really not true, because conservatism sure is the correct ally of our youth. We're preaching, you know, opportunity for all and independence and self-reliance and make your own life for yourself and don't be dependent on government. So it really needs to start very young, and it also needs to start in the home. Parents need to care about what their kids are learning. They need to be involved in their education. That's why a lot of parents are homeschooling right now. So it's not going to be easy. I think it can happen, but it's going to have to start in the home with very proactive parents and then follow through into the curriculum where real history is taught once again.
What were you hoping to achieve with the book? I mean, for someone like myself who hasn't spent that much time in New York, it was a real eye-opener. I mean, I suspected it was obviously way to the left, but the types of verbal abuse that you were the target of surprised me. But I suspect that sharing that experience with people wasn't your only goal. What did you hope to motivate people to do with this book, Jedediah?
I want people to practice what they preach, and this is something that I often say to people on the left and the right. So if you're going to say that you stand for tolerance, then stand for it. Don't say, you know, I'm a beacon of tolerance and civility and I believe in feminism, and then have your actions completely exemplify the opposite of that. So I really wanted to speak to that. At a time in our country right now, we're heading into a 2012 election season where, like I said, authenticity matters. People are paying attention to those candidates and those people who have in the past, via their records, practiced what they preach. And I think that in our everyday debate, when we engage, I, for example, as a conservative, when I engage with liberals, I think that I need to practice what I preach. So it was really, I wanted to draw a line and hold a mirror up and say, this is what you're saying, but this is what you're doing. So maybe sit with that, spend some time, and try to modify that, because these two things are contradictory and they shouldn't be.
Very good. Tell the folks at home how they can get a copy of your book.
They can head over to Amazon and get it in Kindle edition or print, and BarnesandNoble.com has it in print and Nook.
We are going to put you in our recommended reading section, and we'll put this interview just beneath that so people can listen to the interview, get to know you, and then buy a copy of the book just by clicking the mouse one time. So we look forward to having you in that section, and we also would love to have you back sometime, Jedediah.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.